Rack up the deals on everything summer at Nordstrom Rack and get brands you love up to 60% off. Vince, Kate Spade New York, Steve Madden, Madewell, Nike, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Just in dresses, tops, shorts, sandals, sneakers, denim, luxury bags, and sunglasses. Rack up the deals today and save up to 60% on summer at your Nordstrom Rack store.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
When you find a deal on your favorite thing in the McDonald's app and order it, does that technically count as online shopping? Save money with the app. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's, prices may vary.
What is up, Nets world? We're back here on the Believe in Nets podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Eric Slater, Brooklyn Nets beat reporter for ClutchPoints.com. We're just over a day removed from the blockbuster Mikal Bridges trade to the New York Knicks. The NBA draft passed yesterday. I had Ian Begley of SNY on the show, an interview later in this episode, to talk about Bridges and his communication with Brooklyn ahead of the deal, as well as some other things pertaining to the Nets. But before that, we did have some Nets news last night. The Nets did not trade for a first-round pick, but they did agree to a four-year, $100 million contract, $96 million guaranteed, with Nick Claxton, their homegrown product, to return to the Nets on a long-term deal. And, you know, briefly just touching on this, the expectation entering the offseason amongst league executives and other people that I've spoken to was that Claxton was going to re-sign with the Nets. Now, when the Nets made this trade, sending Mikal Bridges to the Knicks and jettisoning themselves into a rebuild, I questioned a little bit, will that plan change, as I think, you know, a lot of other people did. But Sean Marks said entering the offseason that his number one priority was re-signing Nick Claxton. He said that he feels there's another level that Claxton can reach. He said he's spoken with Claxton about different awards and different defensive goals that he'd like to see him meet. And, you know, he stuck to his guns there and he stuck on his conviction and he locks in Claxton on a long-term deal. And, you know, a really interesting and a really, you know, just nice development and storyline to see for Claxton coming into Brooklyn. I was at the draft in 2019 when they took him 31st overall. He felt that he had fallen a little bit farther than he would have liked to, but was happy to land with the Nets. And then, you know, he struggles to stay healthy in his first two seasons. He isn't really, you know, garnering a consistent role. But then he bets on himself in 2022 during the offseason. He signs a two-year, $17 million contract. And since then has just emerged as one of the best and most versatile perimeter defending bigs in the NBA. Ranks fourth in stocks, steals plus blocks over the last two seasons, and really just plays himself into a place where he's now signing a nine-figure contract. So, you know, great for Claxton. He works hard. He deserves it. But, you know, I wouldn't say I'm surprised, but there was some doubt about whether this deal would get done, you know, in my eyes with the Nets after making that Mikal Bridges trade, because they don't really have any incentive. They don't have any incentive to stay competitive now. They are in a full-blown tank for a top selection in the 2025 draft and likely also in the 26 draft. So I question whether they would want to sign a player like Claxton who, you know, elevates them. Now, can they still be one of the worst teams in the league and can they still lose plenty of games with Claxton on their team? Definitely. We saw it last season. The question is, can they be, you know, the worst team in the league? Like, that's the goal next season for the Nets from everything that, you know, I've heard and understand about where they're going with this direction. So bringing in a player like Claxton doesn't help that goal. And, you know, is it really worth it to do anything that hinders that goal for a player unless he's going to be in the long-term picture? No. So maybe Claxton will be in the long-term picture. You know, he's 25 years old. He's, you know, just on that timeline where he's young enough to fit with the next rebuild. Say they, you know, this is a 2 or 3 year thing, and then they try to make the pivot towards contention. He'll be 27, 28 years old. So he's a player who could be here for the long term and fit that timeline. And, you know, just talking about the value, a lot of people expected that Claxton would come in around $20 to $25 million annually. And the Nets pay the high range of that projection during their exclusive negotiation period to lock him down and not let him even hit the open market. So they're comfortable doing that. But my read on the situation is, you know, I would expect them, based on their new timeline, to front load this contract. I think that's kind of a no-brainer, in my opinion, to, you know, give him the biggest cap hit in the first and second years of the deal when the Nets are trying to be bad anyway. So there's really no downside. Like, it might limit their flexibility to do other things and try to acquire other assets, but we're only talking like a few million dollars here. So if the Nets can front load that contract and give him a, you know, higher cap hit in the first 2 years of the deal, and then we're looking at the last 2 years of the deal and say he's only making, you know, $22 million in those final 2 years, the cap is expected to rise in the last 2 years of that contract due to the new TV agreement that the NBA is about to agree on. So if they can have him on a low cap hit, you know, 12% or lower of the cap in those final 2 years of the deal, that will give them good flexibility. That'll make him good value for them if they try to build with him, or if he's tried, you know, if they pivot and are trying to flip him later down the line as they make a move towards competitiveness. So that's kind of my read on the situation. I expect that while Claxton got his money, the Nets will be able to format this contract in a way where it's either beneficial to their building with him or to their ability to trade him later on. So that is my viewpoint on the Claxton agreement and news. But, you know, as I said, we're just over one day out from this Mikal Bridges trade, and it's still shocking. It really is. I recorded an instant reaction to it and posted that podcast, but a day out, I'm still shocked that the Nets were able to pull this off and that they were able to swallow their pride to the extent where they sent Mikal Bridges to the New York Knicks. And they've gotten universal praise for the deal. I think everybody agrees that they got incredible value for Bridges. And, you know, just what they were able to flip Durant into was really, you know, an unprecedented haul. But, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit quickly about, before the interview with Ian, about the timeline of this rebuild and how this could look for the Nets, because I didn't fully touch on that on my instant reaction podcast after the trade. But, you know, if you're looking at a timeline and how the Nets could try to build this out, the Nets acquired their 2025 and 2026 picks from the Rockets in that trade. So they have the ability to tank and get those picks and have them be really high selections. But the Rockets still have an unprotected swap from the Nets in 2027. So that could be a glimpse of how, you know, this goes as far as the tanking is concerned. It could be a 2-year hard tank to land top draft prospects, you know, in those classes before a potential pivot and, you know, attempt to regain some, you know, competitiveness and momentum. Does that mean that 2027 swap is going to, going to be the end all be all and the Nets have to avoid that being a good pick? No, but I think it's safe to say that they're going to want to. So that's kind of how I see this, a 2-year hard tank. And as I said on my instant reaction pod, the Nets have a lot of flexibility and a lot of different ways that they can build this out based on the different assets that they have at their disposal. And, you know, an asset that we've seen Marks take advantage of in his last rebuild to accumulate more assets is cap room and cap flexibility. And I crunched the numbers last night, and with Claxton's new deal, the Nets are going to have roughly $55 million in committed salary next offseason. And, you know, the cap is projected for $155 million. I've written about this several times. So that means that the Nets will be able to open over $100 million in cap space next offseason. Now, I think, obviously, extensions for players like Cam Thomas, potentially De'Ron Sharpe will eat into that number. But the bottom line is, you know, being able to feasibly even get $100 million in cap space, it's a monster number. And the Nets will be very high, even with extensions to whoever they, you know, look to put on the books for that year. But, you know, using that cap space is a way to accumulate more assets. Obviously, if there's free agents that they like and there's guys that they think fit or young, have upside, like they'll have the ability to sign those guys. But another way to use that cap space is to absorb, you know, unwanted salary from other teams' salary dumps. We've seen the Nets do this in, you know, prior years. They took Damari Carroll and got a first-round pick from the Toronto Raptors. And like, those are the kind of deals that the Nets will be able to make using this cap room. If a team has salary that they want to clear off their books, long-term money that they don't want, they'll be able to trade that salary to the Nets, and the Nets can absorb that into their cap space in exchange for first-round picks. They also, you know, have expiring salaries in this offseason, and Bojan Bogdanovic, Dennis Schroeder, Ben Simmons, who they can also, you know, swap that expiring salaries for other contracts from other teams that go beyond next season and, you know, get draft picks in return for that as a way to help other teams clear money off their books. So pretty much a two-year hard tank is how I'm seeing this. And during that phase, the Nets will have abilities to, you know, acquire young talent, whether, you know, using draft picks or more likely signing people, you know, in addition, obviously, to their ability to draft people with their own selections. And then they'll have that cap space to try to accumulate more picks. So it's going to be ugly in the short term, but the Nets are in a really good position to have a ton of assets moving forward and a ton of cracks at, you know, landing top talent, you know, in a variety of ways. So I think it's promising in that regard. Going to get to the interview with Ian Begley of SNY, who had great intel on Mikal Bridges' camp and their, you know, involvement with this trade and how it kind of all played out and came together really quickly on Tuesday night to shock the NBA world. So hope you guys enjoyed the interview with Ian. And I'm joined now by SNY's Ian Begley, who has had a busy last couple of days, had some great intel on the Mikal Bridges Knicks trade. And Ian, you know, from what I'm told, this deal came together fairly quickly Tuesday night, and you had some really good intel on a push from Mikal Bridges' side to make that happen. So what can you tell us about Bridges' communication with the Nets ahead of this trade happening?
Yeah, this was something where both the Knicks and the Nets were aware before this, as this trade was being discussed, and before that, in the run-up to it, that Mikal Bridges wanted to be a Knick, that he was prepared to tell other teams that wanted to trade for him. And we know reportedly Utah was right there. And I had a source confirm that report. I think that was Jake Fisher, that he was going to tell teams he was going to sign with the Knicks in free agency and not re-sign with that team. His side was probably going to communicate that to the teams who wanted to trade for him so he could be a Knick. It was that kind of a scenario, and the Nets were aware of it. Even the Knicks were aware of it in the run-up to their final discussions with the Nets. So I think that, I mean, look, the Knicks offer was a really incredible offer. I think it was far beyond what any other team had offered the Nets to that point. The Bridges, probably far beyond what any team would have offered. So I think the offer got it to the finish line, but I do think that element of his desire to be a Knick and what they were prepared to do to get to New York helped get this trade done.
Yeah, many, you know, are shocked that the Nets made, you know, the trade with Bridges when they did. You know, the signaling had been that they wanted to put a star next to him and, you know, fill out that roster using their draft capital and their 2025 cap space. Obviously, a lot of people thought that star might have been Donovan Mitchell this offseason, but the signaling has been that he's going to sign an extension with Cleveland. So to your knowledge, do you think that this was the Nets not seeing, you know, a star available and, you know, showing teams that they had a willingness to move Bridges? Or was this Bridges saying, I want to be a Knick, at which point the Nets knew that they couldn't bring him back and that they had to move him?
I think that, I don't want to like hedge on you, but I do think both things factored in, like, because the Nets were, to my knowledge, looking for that player to bring around Bridges, and that they were doing that in earnest, and that was not a facade. I mean, they were thinking about it, planning around it, trying to find that player. But I think maybe Mitchell factored in, maybe that was a factor, but also the idea that that player was not immediately on the horizon or didn't immediately present itself, and then this deal presented itself, the incredible draft capital presented itself, it was almost an opportunity you couldn't turn down. It would be like malpractice to say no to that deal, in my opinion, without knowing that if you knew someone was coming with Bridges, sure, maybe you turn it down, but that's an unknown. So you take what's known. So I do think both probably came into play. And look, they will still have that cap space. It seems like it's going to be a much slower play now, obviously. And, you know, the thing I wonder about, somebody I was talking to brought this up, like, I guess Jordy Fernandez, maybe he was prepared for all these different scenarios when he took the job. But I just wonder, like, if the Nets were saying to him, like, we're not dealing Mikhail, like, this is our plan going to 2025. We're going to try and make a splash. And then this happens. Does this catch Jordy off guard, or was this not what he was kind of planning when he took the job? That's just something I wonder about. I don't know how it was or was not explained to him, but I'm just curious about that.
And it's something that I've wondered about as well, because, you know, the signaling from the Nets has kind of been, you know, a little bit scattershot. Like, while the expectation was that they were trying to put a star next to Bridges, the signaling, you know, with the Fernandez hiring and some of the things that I've heard is that, you know, they're placing an emphasis on player development. And they have some of these young guys like Cam Thomas, Noah Clowney, Dariq Whitehead, Jalen Wilson. So it kind of seems like, to some extent, with Fernandez, you know, in mind, they were playing both fields of, you know, having a guy who could be in a developmental role while also having a guy who could, you know, help them maintain competitiveness. But, you know, from what you're saying about Bridges's, you know, his camp, it sounds like, you know, you're saying they were prepared to play hardball and force their way to the Knicks. And given that they were willing to take that stance, were you surprised that the Knicks, you know, at what the Knicks still had to give up, you know, 5 first round picks, a swap, a high second round pick to get this deal done, you know, while having Bridges in their corner?
You know, I mean, my understanding of this thing was that the Knicks had been like trying unsuccessfully, going back to when the Nets first acquired Bridges, to get the Nets to engage. And they had been offering, you know, the picks that you saw reported. I think at one point they offered 5. I'm not sure if that was when the Nets acquired Bridges or thereafter. But they had been trying to engage, and this had been like their kind of, I don't want to say dream scenario, because I don't know if that's the case, but the player that they really coveted, and they just didn't think that it was possible. They didn't think a deal was going to get done for all the obvious reasons that'll be obvious, that are obvious to your listeners, so I don't have to get into that. But I think on, I don't even know what day it was now. Was it Tuesday? On Tuesday, that's when it happened? Yeah, Tuesday. Yep. So my understanding was they talked to the Nets. They thought it was kind of the same stuff, like where maybe they weren't going to really get to engage. They were told that there was a offer in place that was better than theirs. And it became like, all right, what do we have to do to top it? They figured out what they had to do to top it. And then they did. And then they were very surprised when Sean Marks, or I shouldn't say Sean Marks, I don't know who exactly was on the call, said, okay, like, let's really talk about it. And then it happened very quickly. It happened so quickly that I don't think, like, a lot of people, some people who would have been looped in on the Knicks side were actually looped in because of the speed of this thing.
Do we have any knowledge of that other offer that might have topped theirs, of where that would have been from? Or do you have any educated guesses on that?
My educated guess would be Utah, but I don't know that. I don't know that. And then it's interesting, because if it happens that it is Utah, then, you know, Bridges' side has to go and kind of play hardball. And then, you know, what does that look like? And does that get messy? So, if I had to guess it was Utah, I'm not entirely sure though.
And, you know, you speak of the Knicks somewhat being a little surprised when, you know, Marks or Josiah, whoever's on the phone saying, you know, okay, and then them really getting into deep into the negotiations. I think a lot of people have that shared experience because the Nets and Knicks before this hadn't made a trade since 1983. And while the Nets got in, you know, incredible value for a player like Bridges, who's never been an all-star team, this was a pretty ballsy move by ownership and Sean Marks. I mean, you're elevating your crosstown rival to contender status while jettisoning yourself really into irrelevance, at least for the next season or two. Leading up to this deal, I mean, you're a New York guy. You do reporting on both teams. Leading up to this, did you ever envision a scenario where Brooklyn would actually send Bridges to a crosstown rival and kind of, you know, have him be that last infinity stone of the Nova guys and their push to a championship?
No, definitely not. And not under Sean Marks, I should say, because of the chronology of where the Nets are in his tenure. You know, he built the roster up in a fantastic way, attracted Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving. We know how that went. Did not go well at all. Aftermath of that, I thought Bridges was going to be the cornerstone of his putting it all back together. And so because of that, I thought that there's no way that he's going to trade Bridges and admit, like, hey, the best thing I got back, best player I got back in the Durant Irving deals is not the guy we thought he was. I don't think he would have the leeway to start another rebuild, to do what we saw Tuesday night. So for all those factors and plus the Knicks being crosstown rivals, I just didn't think it was possible. So I give a ton of credit, whether it works out or not, whether you think Sean Marks should still have a job or not, he's here. So I give Joe Tsai a ton of credit for sticking with him. Again, whether you agree with it or disagree with it, and allowing any executive, Sean Marks or whoever's in place, to take this step and to go down to the studs again and to try to do it the right way again, because it's a painful process. It's expensive. But if you want to win in this league, this is the way you do it. You have to do it through the draft, and you have to hit on, you know, two guys, three guys, and then build around that. And so kudos to them for doing it again. I really didn't think this was going to happen. And that may be the most surprising part to me, that Marks was able to do this again.
And everything you just said is stuff that I've, you know, this conversation of should the Nets trade Bridges, should they pursue a star, like that has been the conversation surrounding the Nets for, you know, the last, you know, since the trade deadline or even before that. And I've talked about what you just said exactly on this podcast multiple times of, you know, Sean Marks is a guy last season, many people were surprised that he still had his job. You know, he has one playoff series win. We obviously know KD, Kyrie, Harden asking out within a year of each other. So my reasoning for thinking that they might not move off of Bridges or try to see it out with Bridges as much as they can is that, you know, are they really going to let Marks go into his, you know, 9th, 10th, 11th years as GM and start another phase, you know, with this lack of playoff success? I didn't think they would, but, you know, they did it. And as you said, kudos to them. But now they're in a full-blown rebuild. Like, this is a tank, tear it down to the studs. You know, we already seeing some people on the Long Island Railroad with the Cooper flag tape over the Durant jersey.
Love that.
So there are more moves to be made here. Obviously, we had some rumblings, obviously, about like guys like Cam Johnson and Dorian Finney-Smith last night during the draft, their availability. The Nets don't make a trade for a first-round pick, but they have veterans who are going to have value, particularly those two guys. They also have now Bojan Bogdanović, Dennis Schroeder, even Ben Simmons on expiring contracts. And I think the expectation is that they're going to remain active. Have you heard anything about, you know, what their plans are with those players or the kind of value or maybe teams who have been involved as they look to, you know, kind of liquidate the remaining assets that they have?
Yeah, I think it was the Jason Anderson in Sacramento. I think he's with the Sacramento Bee who noted the Kings. I think the Kings had two, like, potential pathways leading into the draft. One of them was Kuzma. They had been in touch with Washington on Kuzma. And I think another was Cam Johnson. So that's at least one team that I pretty sure was engaged on Cam. I would assume there was several teams engaged on Cam. And so I just, based on that, I would think that those conversations continue for as long as they need to or can. And then, you know, the veterans that you mentioned certainly make sense. And I even wondered, like, hey, given where this thing is now, obviously they were always wanting and committed to bringing Nick Claxton back, but do you commit that kind of money to anybody right now based on where you are, or do you try to get some draft compensation? So that's, I mean, I don't think those conversations ever happened, but I was just wondering, hey, does this even change something for a player like that because of the drastic 180 that this Bridges trade has caused the Nets to do? So I don't think that ever happened, but I do think, short answer, those conversations will continue. Sacramento obviously did not finalize that deal with Washington for Kuzma, so maybe they revisit that, but maybe they also revisit the Cam Johnson talks.
And, you know, closing out Claxton, you just touched on him. And I think that, you know, the expectation, obviously, from, you know, people around the league and executives that I spoke to entering the offseason was that Claxton was going to re-sign with the Nets. But then this bomb drops on Tuesday night with the Bridges trade, and the Nets are going into a full rebuild. And, you know, logically, that kind of throws a little bit of question into, you know, how do they handle a player like Nick Claxton? Does Claxton want to come back? You know, do they want to commit a huge chunk of money to a guy like him? But, you know, they are prepared to do that. Obviously, last night they give him a 4-year, $100 million contract, 96 guaranteed. And for Claxton, you know, the money talked and he took it and he seems happy with it. But, you know, I it sounds like maybe a little bit you kind of answered before this, but were you surprised by the figure on that deal, you know, given where maybe the market would have been at, or given the fact that the Nets are now going to a full rebuild, that they were able to, you know, commit that much money? Or do you think that them going into a full rebuild kind of signaled, you know, we don't really have much to lose here with overpaying a little bit to retain a guy like that?
Yeah, I think more so the former. If I had to truly guess, right, maybe that they were, this thing had been, you know, it was so much of a handshake deal prior to the Bridges trade that you are maybe like ruining your reputation if you're the Nets, and then you renege on it at that point because maybe, you know, everybody's plans and everybody's approach to that point was that this was going to happen in some way, shape, or form, and they were very close on it. So maybe it was that. Maybe you just didn't want to, you know, hurt relationships with an agency and or be known as a team that would do that. So I get because the other way, like, yeah, I don't know why you would do it the other way. Like, if you're totally rebuilding, then why? I guess I know you love Nick Claxton, but you don't really need to give him that kind of money if you're knocking it down to the stud. So maybe it was that. I'm sure you had heard similar things, like between 5 years that their side, that Claxton wanted, and, you know, 25 a year that they were looking for. Nets, I was told, wanted to be around 20. So I guess they found middle ground there. But in terms of actually doing the deal in the aftermath of that Bridges trade, it does surprise me a little bit that they did it, but it also makes sense just from a relationship standpoint.
Yeah, and Claxton, you know, he's 25 years old. So I was kind of, after they made the Bridges trade, wondering this. And he's kind of, you know, right on that fence of, you know, say they want to build this rebuild out 2 years and then start to go for it again. He's young enough where he fits that window.
Right. That's fair. Yep.
Yeah. And also, I'm kind of expecting them to, you know, they have obviously leeway and they can, you know, structure this contract how they see fit. So I'm somewhat expecting them to front load this deal in the first 2 years when they're expected to be really bad and they really don't have, you know, it really doesn't hurt them that much to give him a few extra million. And then if you have it descending into those last 2 years when the cap raises and he's at a really low percentage of the cap, that could be of good value, whether they want to keep him and build the roster or whether they want to flip him to another team. They could have some good value on those final 2 years if they structure it that way. But, you know, to close this out with you, the Nets, obviously, I said, they're in full rebuild mode. It's tear it down to the studs, and it's, you know, tank for a top selection in a really good 2025 draft. Just like when you look at this roster and you look at Sean Marks and you look at, you know, the way that they could try to build this out, do you, you know, how do you view them building this out? There's obviously a lot of factors that will play into it as we go, but do you view this, you know, as like a little bit of a shorter rebuild and then trying to make a leap back, or how do you, you know, envision them playing it out with the pieces they have and with what, you know, they could try to do moving forward?
Man, I hope they don't microwave it. I hope they don't like still try to go crazy in 25 with signing veterans. I don't think that's the right way to do it. If you can, if you're in this position, slow play it. This is the perfect way to start. And we saw what Sean Marks, what his history is at this position of roster construction. And in this case, he's got a ton of draft picks. So I think they're in a tremendous spot to be good for a very long time, as long as they don't try to rush it. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you can rush it. But I just think in general, that slow approach, get a few great players through the draft and you have them for at least 7 years. And so that's the way to do it. So I think they're in a fantastic position to be very good for a long time if they can be patient. And Eric, one thing I wanted to hit on too is when we were talking earlier about like the Nets giving the Knicks a chance to win a title and how bad the optics would be if the Knicks won one, it just reminded me of 2019 when, you know, the Knicks were all in on Kyrie and Kevin Durant, and everybody and their mom thought that it was going to happen. And then Kevin and Kyrie go to Brooklyn, and the Knicks, I'm sure, felt the same way. I know the fan base, the people that I was in touch with, felt the same way. How do we let them go anywhere? But how do we let them go to Brooklyn? They're going to win multiple titles. We're going to be sitting here with, six power forwards, and what are we doing? And I can't believe it. And so, you know, here we are 5 years later, and the opposite may be taking place. But I just say that to say, like, there are no guarantees, right? Like, if it doesn't work in New York, people are not going to be happy. And maybe, you know, 5 years from now, we're sitting here talking about the Nets with their great draft pick in 25, their great draft pick in 26, like ascending to like a conference final. So it's just funny how, it seems things are going to go one way, and sometimes in pro sports, they go a different way. And that's what makes it so much fun to follow and be a fan, and for us, be reporters on.
Yeah. And I'm sure Joe Tsai is, you know, sitting there looking at, you know, Mikal Bridges over there in the Knicks now and thinking, what happened, man? I mean, it's really, it's incredible. You know, you followed it probably as closely as anybody, but the downfall of this Nets, the whirlwind kind of direction, the zigs and that zags they've taken, a pandemic, you know, all these things that have played into them falling to this position. So I give Joe Tsai credit on signing off on a move to send Mikal Bridges to the Knicks, because it really was a swallowing of pride and a signal that, you know, we're willing to do what is the best basketball move for this organization, regardless of optics. And on, you know, the topic of the rebuild, to close it out, you know, they it's worth noting that they have this 2025 first and the 2026 first, what they got back from the Rockets. And then the Rockets still have their swap unprotected in 2027. So that could be a little bit of an outline of how they build this out with trying to, you know, really go for the tank these next 2 years. And then maybe make that leap back to competitiveness, but who knows? But Ian, you know, I really appreciate you for joining me, guys. If you don't, go to Ian's page on SNY. He also hosts a podcast called The Putback, does incredible work over there covering the Knicks and the Nets. So really appreciate you for joining me, man, and hope you can get some sleep in these next couple days.
Well, it's great to be with you, Eric. Thanks for having me, man. And let's go Giants. All right, dude, take care.
See you, man. And that does it for this episode of Believe in Nets on the Believe Podcast Network, your one-stop shop for everything happening across the sports and entertainment world. Hope you guys really enjoyed the interview with Ian, have some great insight As always, you know, I'm your host, Eric Slater, Brooklyn Nets beat reporter for ClutchPoints.com. Make sure to subscribe to Believe in Nets on all streaming platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Subscribe to my YouTube channel at Eric Slater NBA. Smash the like button. Leave a five-star review if you can. That goes a long way. Follow me on Twitter at Eric Slater _ for constant news updates, analysis. You know, the Nets are going to be active in trades throughout this next coming period. Then we're going to get into free agency, and they still have roster spots that they're going to have to fill. So I'll have all coverage of that on my Twitter, on ClutchPoints.com, and on the Believe in Nets podcast, where I'm trying to line up some really exciting guests for you guys in the coming weeks. So excited to get to more of it and talk to you guys soon.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Feel the pulse of the city. Feel the beat of the drum. Feel the bass blow your hair. In Las Vegas, live music delivers much more than sound. It's where music comes alive. With artists like Megan Thee Stallion, Maroon 5, Carrie Underwood, Shania Twain, Babyface, Lionel Richie, and many more. Every show is a playground for your senses. See the full summer lineup at visitlasvegas.com.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
For 25 years, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard, so is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
With the $5 meal deal at McDonald's, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Price and participation may vary for a limited time only.